Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 7th of February. Welcome to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme, a phone-in where we discuss the issues of the day. Good morning to you already, wherever you're listening to you. A bit of a cold and wet morning this morning through the TRE region, but we are warm and dry, or just about here, joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. Good morning to you, Andres.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us, live and lively as always. If you want to get involved with the show, 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Is there something crossing your radar, something you want to get your viewpoint across to us about, then those are the numbers to get in touch with us. In fact, I will give them to you again.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
First off, let's have a look at what's making the front pages in the UK. Devastation in Turkey and Syria is depicted across the front pages. Save from quake, hell quake is the Metro's description, alongside a photograph of a child being pulled alive from the rubble. Daily Mirror has the same image, describing it as a moment of hope amid the horror. The paper says there is a race against time to save people who are trapped after hundreds of buildings collapsed. It quotes a British rescuer saying, "I can only describe it as Armageddon." Truly apocalyptic is how the Daily Express sums up the disaster. Catastrophic, says The Guardian. Help them is the Sun's headline as it launches an emergency appeal, and several have been launched, obviously. In an editorial, the paper says it speaks volumes for Ukraine that it was amongst the first to offer help to Turkey, despite it being a violated country fighting for its life. It urges readers to spare a few quid if they can. Daily Mail leads on fears that Britain will be left defenceless unless the MOD gets more funding. It quotes sources as saying the Prime Minister's silence on the issue has unsettled senior military officers as generals see the army supply stores raided to provide support to Ukraine. The paper leader column warns that stinting on defence is a dangerous folly because if security is compromised in all other areas of national life, we are imperiled. The eye focuses on the return to the political limelight of Liz Truss, with pollsters warning that her quote-unquote comeback has damaged the Conservatives and is highlighting divisions. It quotes the polling expert, Sir John Curtis, as saying the toxic effect of Truss is baked in from her time at number 10. Her allies insist she is loyal to Mr. Sunak, and her comeback is an attempt to create a tax-cutting legacy after failing to achieve that in office. Daily Mirror accuses the former Prime Minister of being unapologetic, with the headline, "Not me, Gov." Its editorial says, "The more Liz Truss speaks, the more deluded she sounds." But the Daily Telegraph says the Prime Minister would do well to heed at least some of what she says, and the economy needs him to define himself in favour of completing what she started by cutting spending as well as tax. The Independent Online leads on the fatalities at the prestigious Epsom College in Surrey, where the head teacher, Emma Patterson, was found dead alongside her 7-year-old daughter and husband. It reports the police searched the school's rifle range after gunshots at 1 a.m. Police have called the deaths an isolated incident. Finally, the Telegraph leads on a warning to Scotland's First Minister by her predecessor, Alex Salmond, that the trans row is throwing away years of momentum for Scottish independence. He accuses Nicola Sturgeon of self-indulgent nonsense on gender self-identification laws, adding that to say to a majority of people that you cannot have single-sex spaces prized and worked and strived for because of some daft ideology imported from elsewhere borders on the totally absurd. Ms Sturgeon has made clear that she still intends to challenge the UK's government's decision to stop gender reforms becoming law in Scotland. Those front pages, again, obviously dominated by dramatic scenes coming out of Turkey from the top today. Metro, saved from quake hell. Mirror, moments of hope amid the horror. This is the young girl is rescued in Turkey. The Guardian, catastrophic. Thousands dead as earthquake hits Syria, Turkey and Syria. The Times, giant earthquake kills thousands in their sleep. The Financial Times, thousands dead after biggest quake in 84 years, shakes Turkey and Syria. Daily Express, quake horror, thousands more feared dead in truly apocalyptic earthquakes. The Sun, 100,000 feared dead in rubble, many more trapped, help them is theirs. Telegraph, they've got the headline, Sturgeon trans row set us back years to Salmond, but also thousands killed in Turkey's most powerful quake in centuries. Daily Mail, defenseless, as fears grow, shrinking military will get no extra funding in budget. Generals and MPs warn that amid global crisis, Britain will be left all but defenseless. Truss comeback has damaged Tories, pollsters warn that's the eye. And finally, Daily Star says half-time holidays are being hit with new travel chaos as the number of new passports being lost hits a five-year high. Some 1 in 20 people are waiting more than 10 weeks for their passports. Wish you were here. You'll be lucky. And those are your headlines this Tuesday, the 7th of February.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. The WhatsApp plus 34645 9967 95. Richard, good morning to you. Already coming in. Defenseless. Who is going to invade a tiny, insignificant crag off mainland Europe when Russians hide and launder their money? Thank you very much. And he's also letting us know that Turkey just had another earthquake an hour ago, a magnitude 5.7 earthquake strikes eastern Turkey region this morning. Death toll surpasses 5,000 in Turkey and Syria from earthquake after Turkey declares 3,419 dead. I think that's going to rise, unfortunately, during the day. More than 5,000 people dead after earthquake is the raking news that we have at the moment, 11 minutes past the hour of time. Morning, Andreas.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
It is quite sobering, isn't it, when we see scenes like this coming out of Turkey.
Absolutely, yeah. Horrific. I mean, the scale of it is incredible. I mean, images we're seeing of buildings crumbling down, they're very, very scary.
I mean, it's sort of thing you see when they are sort of demolishing buildings, you know. You remember when they were knocking down sort of the hotels in Las Vegas, it's scenes like that. And yesterday with the aftershocks and these buildings coming crashing down.
Yeah, the terrible thing is that the main one happened during the night when people are at home in their sleep. So that is a recipe for maximum casualties, which is what we're seeing now. All these figures coming out, it is quite scary. And the size of it is incredible. And it shows that nature doesn't have borders, because obviously it's affecting two different countries.
In Syria as well, Aleppo. When you think of everything, the devastation that's been wreaked in Aleppo since the civil war in Syria, and now to have this as well.
It's one after the other. When it rains, it pours, as they say. Quite a horrific situation there, and the access and the terrain and the weather is all adding up to the problems there. The international rescue teams, they're going from everywhere, what we'll see from the reporting when they get there is, I fear, is going to be even more horrific than what we're seeing on TV.
Indeed, and I'm sure that they're going to be, so there will be more that... Speak up, Giles, says Sin. Hello, Sin, can you hear me? Are you receiving me? Or perhaps just turn your radio up a bit. Anyway, thanks very much, Sin, for that one. And then I imagine we will be seeing lots of fundraising, international efforts, etc. Spanish Red Cross would be the place to go to at first if you want to donate to any... any of the if you're based in Spain and you want to help out in any way you can to the rescue efforts that are ongoing. Indeed,
what is incredible, Giles, is human nature. When we see something as horrific as this, and how quickly the international aid reacts and sending people to help and equipment and so on, and you think, oh, this is nice. But on the other hand, we've got a war in Ukraine where we're sending war material and you see there's both sides of the human nature, the good one and the bad one.
Well, I mean, let's look at that, because Spain this week said it was going to be sending tanks to Ukraine. And I know you got confused, you got your wires crossed when people start saying they're sending leopards to Ukraine. You thought this
was... Well, I just read a headline saying that Poland was sending 19 leopards and 2 tanks. I misread that, and it was 19 leopard 2 tanks.
Yes, so, but it's not, I thought, it's not a circus.
I just rose my eyebrows thinking, what are they doing sending 19 leopards? But that was just me skim reading on the television. Spain said they were going to... this is quite an interesting case, where Spain said they were going to help with sending tanks, only to find out that we have 50 Leopard 2 tanks at the cost of 6 million euros per unit. But they are in a warehouse in Zaragoza, right, in northern Spain.
Yeah.
And they cannot be sent because they haven't been maintained since they were bought. So I did a quick calculation. I thought, we have 300 million euros of taxpayers' money sitting in a warehouse, and we cannot even operate them to sell them to help the Ukrainian efforts. My question, the question that I pose to myself is, are we happy about spending 300 million in army equipment that we don't use, and we cannot afford to maintain it? It seems totally pointless. If you're going to buy... I'm not saying don't buy armament. You know, all countries need to have a defence.
The Daily Mail this morning is going, the UK is defenceless because we can't, we are sending aid to Ukraine, and the UK military is being cut and cut and cut, even though politicians like to say we have the best army in the world, etc. But the harsh reality is somewhat different.
Well, the reality is that we spend 300 million on something that we cannot maintain. So either have a budget to maintain it and make sure they're in perfect operational order, or don't spend the money in the first place. You know, I mean, if you tell people 300 million at the moment as things are, let's look at the NHS, for instance. They're desperate for a injection of cash. And we've got 300 million sitting in a warehouse. It's just bizarre, you know. There must be someone making a provision for saying, okay, we're going to spend these 300 million with these tanks, but we need a program of maintenance. We need to use them. We need to make sure that they're operational. So it's not wasted money. That's what I'm saying. This, if it's going to be wasted money, don't waste it in the first place and utilize it elsewhere. Because at the moment, it seems pointless that we cannot even send the tanks because they're sitting unrepaired in a warehouse.
But the thing, this is an interesting one, because so how many tanks did they say they're in this warehouse?
50.
50 tanks in the warehouse in Zaragoza.
And 19 leopards.
And 19 leopards prowling in the grounds. But I mean, if you think about Spain's role over the past 20 years or so, the thing that they've been involved in has been the UN. You think of Afghanistan and the United Nations and the forces there. That's been Spain's main action, and they haven't really needed tanks there, have they?
Well, no, but they were sent tanks to Bosnia and everything in the past. But Spain has always had the ability to hide behind the sofa when international conflict appears. It's one of those countries that they just see what happens. I mean, the government here with the Ukraine war effort was not, sort of trying to get too involved, waiting to see what happened elsewhere, what Germany decided, what the United States decided. And then when everyone has, shown their cards, we appear from behind the sofa and we go along with what, you know, sort of... the only time we took the lead on international level in conflict was the war in Iraq, and the famous picture in the Azores where Tony Blair, George Bush and Aznar made that alliance to go in the war of Iraq. And that backfired completely because that was a disaster, and it was deemed to be based on lies with all those...
Well, not only that, but you could argue you draw a timeline from that appearance with Bush and Blair, and then we have the Atocha bombings because Spain becomes a target.
Correct. That was why I'm saying that became a disaster. Taking the lead on an international level. So I think that learning the lesson from that is why the other governments start hiding behind the sofa, so not to show the cards too early to see what, you know, how, where they go. So you can't say that Spain is a leader in international politics, certainly when there is conflict out there.
Here's the thing, because you can understand Spain not wanting to get involved. I mean, we just have to look at the situation with Germany, because, you know, Spain 90 years ago went through the bloodiest civil war of the 20th century.
Yeah, I mean,
and since then, and obviously having then lived with a dictatorship until 75, then you can see they're loath to start flinging armor around in the same way that Germany and was very, very loath to commit to any sort of, as John Sweeney would say, heavy metal to Ukraine because of the precedent it might set, all the memories they were trying to expel.
Yeah, but it's a very uncomfortable position for a government to have to take a decision on to, you know, join a war effort or help with weapons and so on, because there's loads of consequences to that in a time where energy prices are influenced by the war. So governments think, are we going to sort of increase the pressure on energy prices, which will, you know, sort of trickle down to the day-to-day lives of our population on more expensive energy, triggering inflation and so on. So the decisions there, you cannot take them very lightly. You can't just wake up in the morning and say, come on, let's all go to war and so on. There's all sorts of implications that they have to take into account. And I understand that it's a difficult decision, but... someone has to take the lead, and usually it's the United States to take the lead, and then we go and hide behind them, saying we are helping, you know, the Western world and the advanced democracies and so on. And that's how they hide these decisions. But I can understand that it's the very, very difficult decisions.
WhatsApp's coming in, +34 645 9967 95. Difference between Ukraine and the earthquake is one is natural and one that isn't. Okay, so the sound apparently is distant, then loud, then quiet, then muffled. I can only, sorry about that, listener, but I can imagine that's something to do with the weather conditions that we are facing at the moment. I will get our technical bods to go and put 50 centimes in the meter or whatever. Anyway.
I don't know why you're looking at me when you...
I'm looking at you technical inspiration, and obviously that's happening. Let's look at... some may argue Ukraine's actions brought on the war. €300 million is chump change. Spain spends $15 billion on defence every year. That's 2% on the budget. And so Andrés is not helping because we may have future repercussions. So there you go, Andrés.
Really?
Yeah, really. So consider yourself chided. Meanwhile... this is coming in. Read the Turkey earthquakes. When our apartment in Fuengirola has swayed during quakes, I've been reassured the buildings here are quake-proof. Having seen the buildings in Turkey collapse, I hope we are as safe as I thought. Live to the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'm Kate Gosling.
Morning, Kate.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
you just before the last... break. I seem to remember hearing something like there's a difference between natural disasters and
once, yes, we're brought on them. That was came in from a listener saying that the difference is one is natural and one has been I was going to say man-made, but you get what I'm saying. We get where we're coming from, yeah?
Yeah, without qualifying too much the term, the point is clear. But one of the things that I've been listening and just picking up is that there is some criticism of the building standards in parts of Turkey.
Yeah, same.
I.e. that the places have been allowed to be thrown up very fast and with some indication that the safety wasn't the first call.
Yeah,
I mean, now, Britain is in no position to cast stones on this one, but I'm saying this as a kind of overall warning against the crazy speed at which the conservative governments we have endured have been pushing for the suspension of standards. If there was a fantastic line, if you have to leave the European Convention on Human Rights to be able to do something, maybe you shouldn't be doing leaving, i.e. that the instinct to stop all controls is actually a suspect one anyway. And it sounds as though from little bits in the background of the disaster reporting that there has been some concern about the building standards, i.e. it is not just a natural disaster, it is possibly being compounded by the way that known standards have been ignored.
Okay.
Okay.
Andres, you're going to take a moment.
No, I was just going to say, the area where the earthquake has taken place is where different plates meet, so it's a big fault line there.
Yeah.
My first reaction was to say, are they building these buildings to standard where they know that sooner or later they're going to get a quake? When I looked into it and I realized that 7.8 is one of the highest scales an earthquake has seen, I wonder if there is a problem with the quality of the building, or even if the quality of the building was good enough, the strength of the earthquake has, you know, overpowered that.
Yes, it's an extremely violent one. So we can't just. Yes, I'm sure that.
I don't know. I don't know what the buildings are like in that part of the world, but I guess that even if they were built to high standards, the sheer force of the earthquake might have tumbled the buildings down. But that's quite interesting because. When I was in Alabama, I was talking to some locals in Mobile, and they were telling me that year they had 18 tornadoes. Walking in around the streets there, I realized that they were building a house still with wooden frames.
Yeah.
And I thought, have they... Don't then learn the lesson that they had 18 tornadoes, but they're still been building a house with wooden frames, which obviously don't withstand the force of a tornado. So there must be, and if that happens in the United States, I don't like to think what happens in countries like Syria or Turkey in the terms of the building standards. But as I said, I don't know what the building standards are there, and I don't know, even the building standards were very high, whether the force of the earthquake would have done what is actually done.
952-78-4000 to the WhatsApps we go. British Standards would, I'm sure if this earthquake had happened in the UK, British Standards would have failed. Thank you for that one. I think this may have been copied and pasted. But our listeners, of course, may know one list that I know. With a maximum Mercalli intensity of 9, violent. That's my Latin coming in because it's 1x, by the way. Just so
well done.
Thank you very much. Parents spent a fortune on my education, at least I can count in Latin. A magnitude of at least 7.8. The earthquake is tied to the 1939 Erzincan earthquake as the strongest instrumentally recorded earthquake to hit Turkey in modern times, while the possibilities of being surpassed by the 1668 North Anatolia earthquake, also the deadliest earthquake to strike the country since the 1999 Izmit earthquake. Many died because of the population density and the timing, as you said, and most were asleep. Morning, John. John Harper. We're going back to Ukraine, and he's come back with Ukraine as a regime change operation by the globalists. During World War II, Russia produced 84,770 T-34 tanks at the rate of 1,200 per month. When Hitler invaded Russia, moved production 700 miles in country. That was 1,300 factories. Yeah, okay. Just the point being on that one, please. Thanks for that. 952-78-4000. And just looking at some of the bits and pieces, Sky have sent Kay Burley to Turkey, so that's always an indicator of the situation. Yeah. If they send Kay Burley, you know it's relatively serious. Right then, 952-78-4000 on that thought. I'm going to get a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live. We'd like to hear from you today on this or anything else that's crossing your radar this morning. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. Andres, you want to talk about the yes means yes law in Spain. Tell us a little bit about, give us some background, please.
This has been in the news now for the last few weeks, front page everywhere in Spain. I'll give you the background of what it is. This is the new law that was passed. The technical name, I think, is Law of Sexual Freedom or something like that. But it's been dubbed the Law of Only Yes Means Yes. Just to tell you how this came about, I think it was 2019, there was quite a horrific case of a gang rape in Pamplona. Mm-hmm. That caused a national outcry, because when these guys were arrested and sent to the court for sentencing, the judges then, in the first instance, there was in the law a difference between abuse and aggression. One would be with the use of force and violence, the other one without. And they, in first instance, they were sentenced on the lesser charge of abuse, because there was no signs of violence or resistance from the victim. Now, the public outcry came because there were four or five guys, obviously of big size and everything, and a poor little girl in a small confined space. And what it transpired that happened is that the girl froze of fear, and didn't sort of kick and scream or anything. On the basis of that, the first sentence was of the lesser charge, and there was sentenced to 9 years in prison. When that case hit the Supreme Court, so your listeners are less distressed by listening to these, they disagree with the original sentence, and on appeal they sentenced them to the much higher charge of aggression, because they understood that intimidation was a type of violence. So the sentence was revised to 15 years, and these guys are in prison. But that caused an
an outcry, a national outcry, and rightly so. The government made upon them to reform the law, so cases like that wouldn't happen again. Now, legislating on the basis of one case is very, very difficult because, as you know, when you legislate, you have to put a lot of different scenarios into a piece of legislation, and that's very difficult. That's why sometimes it's better to ponder and to make sure you make the right things. But in the coalition government between the Socialist Party and the more radical left-wing party of Podemos, Podemos had the Ministry of Equality, mm-hmm. And they made it upon them to be the leaders of this change of legislation. They did change of legislation. They prepared, they drafted it. The government approved it and sent it to Parliament. And in Parliament, it was rushed through. And although the technical people, the lawyers in Parliament and so on, said, careful with this law because it can backfire on you because you could be reducing sentences already in place, they completely ignored it. And they approved the law that came into effect, I think it was in November. From November to now, what we've seen is a trickling of cases where the sentences have been reduced to the number of 400 sentences of convicted rapists having their sentences reduced. And I think it's 18 or 19 of them. They are already out in the street. So, again, another public outcry. This cannot be happening. This is very damaging for the government. It shows in the polls that they are losing votes, and we're heading towards electoral time. They have been contradicting themselves, whether they supported the law and didn't support the law and so on. And only today, the Socialist Party, against the coalition group of Podemos, have presented into Parliament a reform of this law. That basically what it does, it takes it back to the one it was before. So we are not any further forward. The concept of the law, it's a concept that nobody disagreed with, because what he's trying, the essence of the law is for a woman, or anyone who's been raped, could be a man, of course, but generally women, they don't have to demonstrate violence or resistance, which is an ordeal that they have to go through when they go to court, because you know the defense lawyers will question whether sure. they kicked and screamed and they closed their legs or didn't close their legs, and the judge will be and they wanted to take that away from that ordeal in court, and everything was under the same thing, that. Rape, you don't have to demonstrate resistance or anything else. So the essence of the law wasn't wrong, and nobody disagreed with it. Not even the Conservative Party disagreed with it. They said, okay, yeah, that sounds reasonable enough. But the badly written law, I've spoken to lawyers about this, and they'll agree that the problem was so badly drafted, and they didn't take any advice from the technical people who work in Congress and so on, and they ignored it because they wanted to rush it through to make it coincide with the International Women's Day in some
whenever day, it was yeah
whenever it was, and all of that put together is made a real dog's dinner of what it should have been, a very straightforward law to protect women more. And what's happened now is that we have gone back to the previous law in essence, with the sentencing being higher and so on. The consequence of this is a long-term consequence, because under Spanish Constitution, anyone committing a crime can benefit from any law that has been in place that has got a lesser sentence. So it is always in favour of the one who commits crime, which means that the sentences that have been reviewed, you cannot go back and put them back up again. These are now reviews that they are permanent. So this has done a lot of damage. certainly to Podemos. But the what everyone is saying is that, hold on a second, this came from, it was a proposal sent to Parliament by the government, and the ultimate responsible for the government is Pedro Sanchez, which is the Prime Minister. So they are pointing at him, saying, you were ultimately responsible. The funny thing about these, and what is more irritating, is that the fact that nobody in government has resigned, nobody's been sacked, nobody, I mean, this is a total atrocious situation where criminals have had the sentences reduced, and nobody's taking responsibility for this, and nobody's paying for that responsibility in terms of resignations or anything else. So it is, you know, yet again another whitewash.
I suppose the thing is, this goes to show what happens when you have politicians or parties rushing through legislation without, you know, to score, if you like, political points, and to be seen to be doing something, almost a knee-jerk reaction to put legislation in.
Yeah, I mean, to react to one particular case, as I said, it's never a good idea. I mean, we've seen it before. Governments react to public outcry, but the reality is, when you legislate, you have to take into account a wide range of situations, and that law has to be able to be applied to all the different situations. Different defense strategies that will, you know, sort of go one way or another, and the law has to protect every single case. So legislating on one particular case is not a good thing.
But you're seeing this in the UK at the moment with, you know, the announcements coming out of the UK government by, say, the Home Office about Rishi Sunak last week, saying that they were going to, you know, stop the boats. Seems to be one of his pledges, you know, to stop what the UK government thinks is this and excuse the vocabulary, but it's been used by Braverman, the Home Secretary, and saying, you know, there's this basically, you know, there are these tides of immigrants washing out, you know, coming across on small, almost like a flotilla. She used the word invasion, which is obviously, you have to choose your language very, very carefully indeed. And when you consider what Spain goes through on a regular basis, it's small change. But we see the government saying, okay, well, we're going to deport these people without fear of, you know, so that they can appeal their decision when they're turned down, because they're saying, oh, anybody who comes to the UK illegally, or what they say illegally, will be denied any chance of having asylum or being granted, you know, permission to stay in the UK. And that is an absolute knee-jerk reaction that some would say has been put up by, you know, a government that wants to be seen to be doing something. Every government wants to be seen to be doing something.
Yeah, but that what you just mentioned now is a headline. It's not because... In the case of immigration, you have to take into account in many things. One is the law of the land, of how you deal with that. Then you have international law. Then you have the human rights to take into account as well. Maritime law as well. You cannot just leave a boat to float away, because you have the duty to rescue people at sea. That's maritime law. It's international. So there are loads of things to take into account. You cannot just get a headline and say anyone illegal will be sent back. Sent back to where? In some cases, don't even know where they come from. They come with no passports and so on. And we're duty bound to assist people in need.
Just been hit by a massive earthquake.
It is very easy to say we'll send it back. You can grab the headline, but the reality on the ground is very difficult. And legislating around that situation is very difficult to get to that desired, you know, end result, which populist ideas will have, you know, to send them all back.
It's quite all right, Andres. You're saying look, which is always a good. That's the stand about. Here comes a look.
What I was going to say is this immigration. I've said it in this program before. Immigration is something that you're not going to stop overnight. It's just carry on. It's going to carry on happening. So what we need to design is how we manage that immigration, whether we need people in key sectors, and we can get them into society and help.
because you're not going to stop people moving from war zones, hunger zones, and they it's, we are human nature is in constant movement since we've started in this planet, and that's not going to change just because Rishi Sunak wants to send people to Rwanda. It's not going to stop it. So this, we need to find a different solution of assimilation.
A Home Secretary who said it's her dream, nay, her obsession, to see planes leaving to Rwanda. A mistake, evidently, says Kamsin Jay, but I'd kill to have a government like yours in the UK. Meanwhile, the Tories are, it's calling them I'm gonna policies. The Tories are doing something, screwing the country for the benefit of themselves and their donors. Pulling no punches there. 952-784-4000, the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Proficient, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 996795. Your thoughts on what we're talking about today or anything else that may be crossing your radar. It would be great to hear from you. Back with Andreas. Andreas,
yeah. I mean, what's distressing about the law and the change of the law and everything else is that what it appears to me, and this is quite sad, is that we are approaching electoral time. We've got local elections in May. End of the year, we have a general election. Is this coalition government now? They are starting to. So dissociate one party from the other to make a difference, because the fear is that when the election comes, they say, why should I vote for Podemos, let's say, when it's exactly the same as the Socialist Party, so they lose votes and just vote for the Socialist Party, who've got more chance to govern than them. And that's why they're trying to say, we're not like the Socialist Party, we're different, we are doing these, and we, you know, sort of moving forward with the rights for women and everything else. And that is an electoral sort of...
What is interesting is that because when the PSOE tabled an amendment to legislation for the Yes Means Yes and the Yes Means Yes law, they did it without the support of Podemos. And that's the first time they've done that. Because previously, obviously, they were linked in to Podemos. And this seems to be... the changes have only come from the PSOE changed half of the coalition. So.
Yeah, the Socialist Party have done this reform going back to the previous law, because it's basically what it is, although don't call it that, is done by the Socialist Party on their own. And Podemos said they probably will not support it in Parliament, so they've got a problem on passing it now, because... Podemos will probably want supported, but hello, and this is what's going to surprise everyone here, is that the Conservative Party will probably come to the rescue and help the PSOE to get it, you know, the Socialist Party to get it through Parliament, which is hasn't been heard of the Conservative Party helping in any way to the Socialist government. But in this particular case, it looks that they might have to fall back on the support of the Conservative Party to be able to pass it through Parliament.
Mm. How do you see this one shaping up? Because 10 years ago, Podemos was seen to be the new great thing in Spanish politics. It had massive support. The young people seemed to be for it. The very nature of the name of the party seemed to say that it was a going for thing. And also, of course, we had
Ciudadanos.
Thank you very much. That was going to be the great middle ground. Ciudadanos has just disappeared from the political landscape.
It has. I've got my own theory about this. The main two parties, the PP, Conservative, and the PSOE, Socialist, have been since 1976-77, when the first elections took place, free elections. They have had a network at local level. And they have been constantly seeking support of in normal small medium sized towns. You have to look at Marbella, just to give you an example, because where we live, you have the socialist offices and the PP offices. They got one in Marbella, one in San Pedro. So they very much
in touch with the local electorate, and that helps them not only to secure the town halls and everything else, but when it comes to the general elections, they have got a more established structure to be able to capture votes. The new parties, like Ciudadanos, didn't have that structure. It was a little bit of a grabbing headlines they were trading on the back of the corruption of the PP.
I was going to say that the thing is, this is the thing, it maybe came in because of what was happening with the Barcelona.
Correct, yeah. So they had that, and a lot of people said, well, we're not going to go and vote for a left-wing party, but this suits us for the time being. But the fact that there's no infrastructure in the street means that eventually they're going to fizzle out. Podemos has got the same situation. Although they have a little bit more infrastructure, they haven't got enough to be able to be a party with wide support. And these mistakes, the perception from the people is that it is a mistake from Podemos rather than the Soviet government. Although I disagree with that, reading that, because I think ultimately the prime minister is responsible for something he's proposing to parliament. But the perception in the street is that it's Podemos who have messed up the law and the reduction of
sentences.
You could
argue that the Podemos has all the political gravitas as a fifth form debating society. They're very big on the issues. Like, yes, absolutely, give me that pronoun, and let's have 87 different 87 different ways of toilet facilities. But yeah, when it comes to the nitty gritty. And somebody who's a regular contributor to the show will say politics is the art of staying in power, etc. And so Podemos are out there saying, yeah, but we want this and we want, some of the more interesting, shall we say, parties that Podemos come through. And it's not really rooted in the day-to-day running of a country and the deal-making, the backfighting and all the things that go to make, like it or loathe it, the modern-day political life.
Yeah, I mean, these parties, these extreme parties, and I'm going to throw Vox into that sack
as
well.
Throw Vox as far as you want as well.
Yeah, but it's the populist idea that if you simplify a problem into one thing, whether it's in immigration or whether it's, taxing the banks and referendums or all that sort of thing, it's simplifying things. So they're very, very complex, but it's very easy to digest by the public and the voters. And that attracts a lot of votes until you realize that there is nothing behind it with substance. Vox is exactly the same. There's not substance behind it. And an example of that, of the extreme right, you talked about the extreme left, now I'm going to go to the extreme right, is what's happening in Italy when everyone was up in arms because the extreme right had won the election. And can't remember the name of the lady. She became the prime minister in Italy. Well, since then, all the commentators, international commentators, are saying how moderate they are. So they were barking a lot before the election. They won the election on the basis of that. Now they're in power. They are limited to what they can do because they have to, legislate within the constitution. They have to legislate within the international law. They have their members of the European Union, so they have to be in line with everything. So all that barking and all those crazy ideas that they were, where they attracted the vote, have become nothing. So.
Giorgia Meloni, thank you, Stephen, Italian Prime Minister.
Oh, thank you. I forgot the name. Not very good with names.
He doesn't run Europe today for nothing, That's why we're always good to have that. Thank you indeed, Herr Ritson, as always. 952-7843. Don't forget, Stephen Ritson is with us with Europe Today immediately after today's viewpoint, which finishes at 12 o'clock here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. If you want to get involved with today's show, get your viewpoint. If you want to sort of limber yourself up, warm up for the second half of Viewpoint with any thoughts on something we're not covering, you think we should be covering, then I'll be delighted to hear from you on the following numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
coming through on the WhatsApps. Thank you very much. Farage. I'm sorry to frighten you over your cornflakes. Farage. The Financial Times breaks cover with a plan to rejoin the EU. The Tories have really messed this up. That's from everybody's favourites. Nigel Farage has been tweeting, so you have been duly warned. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. I'd like to hear from you today, with any thoughts on what you've got on this or any issue coming up with the news. Just to let you know what's happening today on TRE, following me, as I said before, Stephen Ritson with Tuesday's Europe Today. It's animal talk. Yes, it is. No, not a viewpoint. It's animal talk today. Selena will be talking to, her show. She's talking to, from 2 o'clock, talking to Jackson Galaxy. What a name. Also known as the Cat Daddy. Now, here we go.
Jackson Galaxy,
the Cat Daddy, who is the host and executive producer on Animal Planet's My Cat from Hell. He's the go-to person in respect of cat behavior and wellness. We'll be chatting to him, Selena, and then at 3:10, the return of Animal Talk. On the panel this month are Kay Millington, the lovely Kay Millington from Rescue Paws, the lovely Nazil van der Keerboom from Pointer Clinic, and Bronia Thompson and Sophie Fretwell. They'll be joining. If you've got any animal points indeed. Meanwhile, today Hannah's TRE in the afternoon. She's joined by Howard Breton, as always, an update on the Spanish news. If you weren't aware, Howard has taken over from Bob James. Bob James still providing the Spanish news, but Howard's looking after Spain today. Chatting, and Hannah will chat to him, and also then Kate Robertson about Elizabeth Beresford, creator of the Wombles. Underground, overground, wombling free, etc. She's got a new feature on a show on this time last year. Hannah will be looking back at some of her interviews from last year. And finally, Mark Lamb is back with all the news from the world of sport. Howard brings us Spain today at 6 o'clock, and then it's time for Viewpoint, the repeat of Viewpoint from 7 till 9 o'clock tonight. That's all happening on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. Thank you, Richard, about your thoughts on Cat Daddy. I actually have a cat, best cat dad ever shirt sent to me from a listener from, I think it was my birthday or for Christmas a few years ago, which I wear around the house just to let the cats know who's boss. But there you go. Right then, coming up to the end of the first half of this morning's Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, joined in the studios by Andres Gallardo. In the second half, we'll be talking about a myriad of issues, including the return of Liz Truss. And it's all issue going to be a thorn in the side for the Conservative government. And also, we may be looking at whether the balloon has gone up. What comes up must come down. And China and all things balloon rated. But national and international news is up next here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
And we're back again, always live, always lively, joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. If you want to get your viewpoint across today,
to contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed. Looking at your headlines today, Rishi Sunak is preparing a reshuffle, a small reshuffle of his cabinet to mark his 100 days in office and could announce the changes as soon as this morning. The summer coming through already. The Prime Minister has been looking at a successor to Nadeem Zahawi as Conservative Party chairman. It's expected by Whitehall insiders to make other changes. A well-placed source told the BBC they expect Zahawi's successor to be the Trade Minister, Greg Hands. Another government source told the Times that the reshuffle would be relatively limited, but the Sun reported it could be more extensive and include the merger of three government departments. Richard has very kindly sent me through this one. Grant Shapps expected to be the new Energy Security Secretary. Kemi Badenoch expected to be the new Business and Trade Secretary. Still unclear who would be science and technology job. Todnick to expect sackings. It's all about the new departments. Meanwhile, huge rescue operation is continuing across much of southern Turkey and northern Syria following a huge earthquake that's killed more than 4,300 people, at least 285 aftershocks reported. Teams are scrambling to save people trapped beneath rubble after thousands of buildings collapsed in both countries. Death toll is steadily increasing. So the Times and the World Health Organization warned that the total could rise eightfold. Turkey has declared 7 days of national mourning, according to the Daily Sabah. Meanwhile, two leading economic analysts have predicted that energy bills will fall this summer, helping to bring down inflation and reduce pressures on the cost of living. The Resolution Foundation says it expected the average bill to fall to £2,200 by October, while energy consultancy Cornwall Insight predicted that average bills could fall to about £2,360 over the summer. Emily Fry, an economist at the Resolution Foundation, said the cost of living crisis is far from over, but falling gas prices mean it's looking less bleak than just a few months ago. Truss is still a problem for the Tories. Liz Truss's attempt at a comeback is damaging the Conservative Party brand. Speaking to the iNews site, Sir John Curtis, a professor of politics at Strathclyde University, said leaders that are brought down or resign not of their own volition tend to be a bit of a problem. Chris Hopkins, political research director at polling firm Savanta, also told the paper that Truss hanging around isn't giving Sunak any space to try and carve out a niche for himself or to convince voters that he's different to what's come before. In her first interview last night since resigning as Prime Minister, Truss admitted her premiership was tough, but she just sort of got on with it. "I went in with a very clear agenda about what we needed to deliver," she told The Spectator, "but events took place which I wasn't expecting." Meanwhile, football-wise, Premier League rivals are demanding Manchester City are relegated if the club is found guilty of breaking financial fair play rules. Following a four-year investigation, the club has been referred to by an independent commission over 100 alleged rule breaches from between 2009 and 2018. City said they were surprised by the development and have a body of irrefutable evidence to counter the charges. However, other clubs are demanding blood. One club chief told the paper, "If these charges are proven, there must be proper punishment, and the only fitting one is for them to be relegated." Meanwhile, people who cohabit with a partner have lower blood sugar levels, found a study into the relationship between social isolation and the risk of type 2 diabetes. Previous studies have found that happy marriages offer a range of health benefits compared with being single, including a longer life. I'm doomed. Including a longer life, fewer strokes. Thank you, Andrew. Fewer strokes and heart attacks, less depression, and healthier eating. I better clean out the pot noodles from the cabinet then, Andreas, according to this one. This is published in the British Medical Journal, found that being married or living together helps keep sugar levels under control. The figure appeared the same whether the relationship was happy or under strain. Meanwhile, Prevent, it treats extremists as victims. Islamic extremists are being treated victims. This is an official review into Prevent, the government's anti-radicalization program. The report is expected to find that officials have been too focused on addressing the personal vulnerabilities of extremists with terrorism treated as a mental illness. 7 of the 13 terror attacks in the past 6 years, including the murder of MP David Ames and the bombing of Liverpool Women's Hospital, have been carried out by extremists who had been referred to Prevent. Britcoin could be close. Bank of England and the Treasury are exploring the issues involved with creating a digital pound. You've got to love the UK. Whilst being a cryptocurrency seems to be in a tailspin, they want to launch Britcoin. Consumers could be using digital sterling as an alternative to the cash by the end of the decade as ministers speed up their response to the rise of cryptocurrencies with a four-month public consultation process on a Britcoin kicking off this morning. However, The Guardian says after the volatility of cryptocurrencies and the collapse of the crypto exchange FTX, the bank and the treasury will seek to reassure the public that state-backed digital currency would be as safe as cash. Meanwhile, Harry Styles, who says, "Don't say we're not a broad church here on Viewpoint," has been accused of white privilege after claiming in a Grammy speech that this doesn't happen to people like me very often. That's not his real voice, I just thought I'd put it on. While collecting an award that white men have won 32 times, the former One Direction star took the coveted Album of the Year, an award that's not been won by a black woman since Lauryn Hill in 1999. Podcast host Sam Saunders tweeted that Star's remark is the most white privilege-ished thing ever to be uttered at an awards ceremony ever for all time. And finally, the Church of England could consider human composting at funerals to help meet its net zero target. The process, which is not currently legal in the UK, Andres, stop banging your head against the desk, sees microbes convert in a deceased body into compost. It's increasingly popular around the world amidst a desire for environmentally conscious funerals, said the Telegraph. Bishops are considering establishing a consultation group to assess the theological considerations of alternative means to dispose of human bodies. So there you go. Those are your headlines. If you want to get involved with those or your viewpoint on any of them, I'll even take thoughts on Harry Styles and white privilege. Why not? Then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And now it's time for a bit of this.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful
Yes, we've reached the stage of the show where we're talking all things. What comes up must be shut down. Talking about the balloon going up from Beijing, you see. Saturday afternoon, 6 miles off the coast of South Carolina, a US F-22 jet fired a sidewinder air-to-air missile that blew a massive Chinese balloon out of the sky. China's foreign ministry immediately registered strong discontent and protest over the downing of what it considered was a weather research aircraft that had flown over the US, and it was totally accidental. The missile strike brought an explosive end to a drama that had put a diplomatic crisis between the world's two great powers onto television screens in real time. The balloon's highly visible flight over the US, including over a nuclear missile silo complex in Montana, triggered the last minute cancellation of a visit to China by Secretary of State Antony Blinken, undermining an attempt to Beijing to mend its most important bilateral relationship. Amid a flurry of claims and counterclaims by the two superpowers, one key question remains unanswered. Why was China flying what Washington claims was a surveillance balloon over the US? According to the Pentagon, Chinese spy satellites are capable of securing similar or better intelligence than any spy balloons. The downed aircraft was being used for surveillance. The whole episode raises a lot of questions about decision-making in Beijing. Either this was a case of the left hand not knowing what the right was doing, or possibly a deliberate attempt to sabotage any tension soothing the Blinken trip might have achieved. Another explanation is that Beijing was testing Joe Biden's mettle.
Balloons, yeah. You'll have to excuse my ignorance on balloons. The first thing that attracted my attention was that they call it a spy balloon.
Yeah.
Not a very good spy, if you ask me. It's like...
It was hardly under the radar, was it?
It wasn't. It was very visible. And was it... Now, my thoughts were,
either. Either this was a provocation from China on the United States, and they just threw those balloons there to see what happened. Or that's not China at all, and they're just like a little bit of spin on putting some balloons there and accusing China of putting the balloons there. But as I said, excuse my ignorance in the world of balloons, but I don't know. What I do know is that the all the surveillance you want to do, I assume with technology now you can do it from satellites. You don't need to send a balloon there.
As you said, I mean, satellite technology now reached such a point that they can tell whether you're wearing, to paraphrase Shakira, a Rolex or a Casio, basically.
Correct. So whether you need a balloon to be sent there, I don't know. The world of spies is very, but I mean, just to call it a spy balloon to start with doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to send a balloon so big that everyone can see it, to collect data. What data? That cannot be collected by a satellite without causing any distress. Or is a made-up story, or is a simple provocation to see what reaction you've got there, and that just creates tension between the two superpowers. I cannot go any further than that.
Well, my favourite bit of the whole situation is former President Trump, of course, who urged his supporters to go out and start firing at the thing with hand weapons. Now, that balloon was about 12 miles up, and your average 9mm or whatever you've got, unless there's somebody in Arkansas who's rigged up an anti-aircraft missile system in the backyard, and hey, you know,
it's quite possible there.
But the thing is, what comes up might come down. So, I mean, or will come down, in fact. So it would be highly, highly hazardous. But the thing that we have here is surely this is a political point, isn't it? I mean, this is to see, to show that they can do it. Look, we can put a balloon over there, so...
Yeah, it sounds to me more of a provocation than anything else. If it's indeed the Chinese who have sent the balloon there, is just on the basis that they're just provoking the United States into a reaction, they may trigger in more tension, and more tension may benefit them somehow. I don't know how, but somehow. And that's why they do it. They don't do it without a purpose, if that is indeed what they've done. Learning about balloons. Apparently, there's loads of balloons going around the world that we're unaware of.
Exactly.
This one was a famous balloon, but apparently there are less famous balloons going around South America and all the parts of Europe and everything, and they're all collecting data or whatever they do, or the weather balloons as well. So there's an awful lot of balloons out there, Giles.
Just to let you know, you can't phone me on the WhatsApp. You can only text me on the WhatsApp. So please don't try phoning in. Looking at some of the bits and pieces, the China correspondent for The Telegraph said that Beijing may have flown the balloon over the nuclear complex simply to show it could. And also, being spotted might have been the whole point. China might be using the balloon to demonstrate it has sophisticated technical capability to penetrate US airspace without risking a serious escalation. In this regard, a balloon is a pretty ideal choice. You can also say that the aim of China's aim, because you know they are pretty savvy political wise, is to cause the US as much embarrassment as possible, because being spotted is the whole point. And Biden's being criticized for being too soft on China. And, you know, Republican Joe Wilson was calling on the president to resign over the whole situation. And this may all be playing straight into Beijing's hands. The finger-pointing frenzy that came off the back of this may be viewed in Beijing as a successful mission, you know, full stop. Because if they wanted to embarrass Biden, they've gone that far. We've got a call on the line, 952-78-4000. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? And I'll just go, it's been so long since I had a call. How's that? Caller, you're live on TRE.
Hi, it's John in Meehan.
Hi, John.
Okay. Just an interesting thing about shooting it down or whatever, that there was some comment on a news program that some years ago there was one of these similar balloons flying over Canada, and the Canadian Air Force, I think, fired 26 rounds of ammunition from the aeroplane into it, and it made no difference whatsoever. So the idea of, like, shooting it with a 9mm, even if it did go 9 miles, which we know they don't, wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever anyway.
Bounced off the bleeding thing, yeah, basically.
Well, it might have gone through it, but it wouldn't have been like 26 rounds from a Canadian Air Force fighter didn't bring one down. Mm. And obviously it went through it, through one side, probably out the other, making holes, but it wasn't sufficient to, like, deflate it.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking, obviously, this balloon is quite a massive thing. It's I think it's 200 feet high or something like that. So it's not a party balloon, is it? It's not a hot air balloon.
And it might have some sort of gas in it that self-seals it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, who knows? But an interesting one, I think we'll agree, John, no?
Yeah, interesting. But I think it was just a bit of a... It was obviously China winding them up, wasn't it? It wasn't fake news because China admitted it happened. And apparently, if balloons do... They never fly them over other people's territory. And if they go off course by mistake, apparently it's protocol for the country to inform the other one and say, excuse me, but one of our balloons is on its way over your country. So it was obviously clearly a wind-up by the Chinese for whatever reason.
I'm just wondering how it's piloted. Presumably it's, they don't just put it up and hope that the current takes it there, the Gulf.
No, it was steerable.
A steerable balloon, right. Okay.
Yeah, because they said that it flew across the water and then it stopped and was then looking down at some important site or whatever. So it was definitely, it was navigable, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, the missile site. Okay. Months. Thank you very much for that.
No, I was going to ask, sorry, no, I was going to ask John, because he seems to know more than me about balloons, what he thought what the balloon was actually doing. Was it spying? And spying what and for what purpose? That's what I'd like to know, whether John knows it or anyone knows it. We don't know, but the end result is that we have one less balloon in the air.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. One less balloon in the air. 9527884000. Yes, thank you for sending me the Trump baby balloon. Yes, indeed. Looking at... a few bits and pieces. Britcoin, short the hell out of it. You've assumed the dingalings in Arkansas have brain cells, bless you. It's not a wind-up. There's a second balloon flying over South America. What could possibly go wrong? Good morning, Gary. I would love human composting, but do they have to be dead first? In China's defense, it did have on the side of the balloon, happy birthday, Lily. Okay, fine. Lily. No, got me on that one, Gary. You'll have to quantify that one because you've lost me on that one. But it does, I mean, it does. If they wanted to cause the maximum sort of outrage and outrage and whatever, it's certainly done that. Looking at some of the tweets coming in, some of the tweets that have come in saying things that the fact that the top general in NORAD failed to detect earlier Chinese spy balloons. I will tell you, we did not detect those threats, and that's a domain awareness gap. That's from Air Force General Glenn Van Herk. So they have been up as before. And looking at the three Chinese spy balloons spotted during the Trump administration were initially classified as UFOs. So there you have it. Looking at some bits and pieces coming in. Government has known about spyware long before now, and this is in the US, as I believe they knew about Chinese spy balloons. Shamefully, nothing would have been done if it weren't for two American citizens taking photographs and reporting it. The administration is not watching out for them. And the Breitbart, of course, has come in saying that Chinese spy balloons should not be tolerated by the civilized community. The US has The U.S. has China's accused the U.S. of overreaction after it shot down the balloon. And U-2 spy planes were snooped on the Chinese. So you got snoops snooping on the snoops, if you don't see what I mean, with U-2 planes, which, of course, the very high altitude planes have been getting for 60 years, U-2 planes.
Yeah.
Looking, you know, that, looking down on this, on the spy, the Chinese spy balloon.
It's interesting to see how all the news channels in America follow the balloon as if it was a car chase or something. So the amount of media attention that the balloon got, is it justified? I don't know. I don't see the importance of the balloon there, apart from being maybe a provocation with the aim of sort of undermining the U.S. government. That could be an option there. I truly don't know, because, as I said before, any spying or any data gathering or any movement sort of looked at and everything can be done from a satellite, which are highly sophisticated, and they can see everything, basically. What a balloon can do, apart from causing embarrassment, other than that, I can't think of anything else.
Give you some idea of the size of the thing. It's the same size as a 20-story building. So this is huge, this balloon.
Great spy.
Great spy, yeah. This is coming in after the US jet fighters took out the Chinese spy balloon that had slowly traversed the country last week. The idea of stabilizing relations between the two superpowers might seem naive, yet the two sides still need to try, and China must take the first step. Obviously, conservative Americans are saying that it's Biden is covering up because he's just inept. And it's funny how these anonymous sources always seem to come out of the woodwork to protect Democrats. All things spy balloons. House Republican blast spy administrations for having a closed door briefing about the Chinese spy balloons. All things, what comes up might come down eventually if it's shot down by a sidewinder and causes maximum embarrassment to Biden. It doesn't seem to be. He's been a bit quiet recently, Biden, and this has put a hole in his credibility. You could argue, Andreas.
I mean, Biden has got. Is it today? He's got the statement of the State of the Union. I think he might mention the balloon. It sounds like a joke, but no, I think that some explanations will come from that speech. We'll see what they have to say. I'm still puzzled by the fact that I don't know what the Chinese will get out of sending a balloon, as I said, apart from causing embarrassment and a little bit of tension between the two superpowers.
Indeed. Well, what the good thing to come out of it was the fact I was allowed to play the fifth dimension at the beginning of that little stab. So they up and away, if you're wondering what exactly that tune was. Back after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And to the last half hour or so of today's Viewpoint, joined by in the studio by Andreas Gallardo. If you want to get a viewpoint across, you've got something we haven't covered. And these numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And 26 minutes left of the show. Now then, Liz Truss. Just when you thought it was safe to go back to the dispatch box, if you were Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss appeared with a 4,000-word interview in The Telegraph saying how she was undone by lefty banks. And if that's not an oxymoron, I don't know what isn't. David Goff said, Liz Truss launches comeback must surely be the most unwelcome announcement, said the midwife, said Mrs. Rees-Mogg, it's a boy. The saying I said before, it's the former, briefly, blinking you'll miss it, Prime Minister was on Quote unquote, it's roughly 100 days since Liz Truss scuttled away from 10 Downing Street, an address she managed to occupy within less time than it took her to be anointed by 0.1.2% of the population, who thought a Margaret Thatcher tribute act squawking growth like a parrot was the natural successor to Billy Bunter's less intelligent twin. So the former prime minister was putting her point, saying, "I was brought down by the left wing economic establishment." It's an example of the zombie politics that grips the UK. That's one of what somebody said, looking at that, she started a comeback via a 4,000-word essay in the Sunday Telegraph, absolutely all of which were unhinged. Liz Truss came back, but it's already over, and there can be few people have not witnessed a comeback like it. Usually when a friend attempts to come back into a nightclub from which they've just been ejected.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Take that, then. Me, and was it, who was it in the Independents? But Tom Peck said that take that, at least waited a decade before their comeback. And they came back with a whole load of material, arguably better than the stuff that they last left. But Truss came back with exactly the same witless, intellectually and economically illiterate drivel that was the precise cause of having her being sent away in the first place. It comes with a very sense of deja vu. There can be few people who have not wished to come back like it. No apology, check. Contrition, check, of course not. What we do witness is an eerily familiar scene of absolutely wrong defiance and a raging certainty that Liz Truss was always right. And not even that drunk, and the nightclub security staff, in this case wearily played by the Treasury, the markets, her own party, and indeed most of the free world, will all be made to pay for her ruining the big night. We go live to the lines, as I thought we might do. Morning, Cooley, live on TRE.
I'm back like it. No apology, check. Contrition.
Hello, you're live on TRE.
We do with
it.
Thank you for your introduction to Liz. I think she's a bit like the balloon. There was no one is expecting Liz Truss to raise her head from the wherever for at least twice as long as her 44 days in power. And she's come up blaming everyone else. I mean, there's a list, and I could spend time reading out all the list of the people that she blamed, but it wasn't her. And someone summarised her long interview as saying, basically, sorry, but not sorry. She's John Crace in the Guardian said, the political correspondent, to decide, it gives us a chance to reach our verdict, to decide whether she's actually even dimmer than she appears, or if she's totally dishonest, or both, which is, devastating as a criticism. And let's hope that the British public don't get deceived. And I would never have described Jacob Rees-Mogg as being left-wing economist, would you?
Well, no, exactly. And I mean, there was this interview with The Spectator that came out about 6 o'clock our time yesterday, and she's made the same arguments that she made and got her into the situation in the first place. And
yeah.
Basically, she's saying that her and Kwasi Kwarteng, remember who he blinking you miss at the Chancellor, who came up with these who basically took a punt on the markets and got shot down, and that now they're saying that she undermated, this is a quote, that she says she undermated the scale of the orthodoxy which has come to replace experts basically in the playbook of the populists.
Yes, it's just the lady is demented, I think. but I hope she doesn't get tolerated by the presumption that if you say anything hard right often enough, you can get taken seriously.
Mm. One of the things, the Treasury, of course, the Permanent Secretary Tom Scholar, who they forced out on day one, and then they because they liberated from those constraints, they accidentally set fire to the economy because they didn't understand what they were doing. The most remarkable point of the, and having looked at the Spectator, is the omission that neither her or Kwarteng had any clue to the consequences of their actions, and they didn't understand that UK pension funds would be exposed to volatility.
Oh, yes, exactly. Cheers.
Thanks very much for that. Okay, good to have you with us. Yeah, go on.
No, sorry. No, I was going to say the interesting thing is that at no point she has offered an apology for the damage caused. As Kate said, you know, I think she's dimmer than she looks. That's my opinion, because the misjudgment of that mini budget was so brutal and so damaging that now to come back again without offering an apology to everyone in the UK.
Come back saying, well, actually, I was right all along, but I didn't know what I was doing. And if anything, I should have sacked more people. But
my understanding is that she was badly advised or ignored the advice. Whatever, when you're a prime minister, like I said before about Pedro Sanchez, you're ultimately responsible for what comes out. And she's ultimately responsible for the damage that she caused. And everyone agreed, even her own party agreed that was wrong to present. The markets, you know, sort of reacted to that. And she's just coming back like nothing's happened and no damage caused, no apology offered.
Well, this is the best one, because she had a shot at Joe Biden as well, because Biden had said he questioned whether borrowing tens of billions of pounds to give it away in tax cuts, which is what she wanted to do, was actually completely mad. And she said, quote unquote, "It reflects a drift right across the free world towards what are essentially more socially democratic policies. Higher taxes, higher spending, bigger government, relatively low interest rates and cheap money." That's not a drift. That's just reality as opposed to ideology, which is, as somebody said as somebody said in The Independent, Liz Truss is one pizza short of a QAnon conspiracy.
Aznar,
he sort of shouted from the sidelines for a while, didn't he? Zapatero has gone very, very quiet indeed. But do we see Spanish ex-prime ministers coming back and sticking the knife in like this one?
No, Aznar is the only one who's active out there, because he's always giving a speech here or there.
Yeah.
But Rajoy is very, very quiet. He's gone back to his old job. He's a property registrar. He's gone back to his old job. Zapatero.
Yeah, where is Zapatero?
Zapatero is member of the council. Of the country, the Royal Council or something, and he likes to go to Venezuela to defend the regime of Maduro there, that's what seems to be doing. It does, I believe, he does have the ear of Pedro Sanchez, and he's just going from speech to speech, making a lot of money like they all do when they leave office, you know. I mean, that's. But the case of Liz Truss is just something beyond words, that misjudgment on that mini budget is just like, I'm surprised that she didn't listen to any of the advisor, because I'm sure when I read it, even I thought, oh my God, that's so wrong. Surely before it was announced, the advisors at number 10 would have said, hey, Liz, careful with these, because the reaction could be these, that and the other. They have to predict these things. They just cannot go and throw whatever they comes through their head into the ruedo, like we say in Spanish.
Yeah.
Because the consequences are very serious. So you have to be cautious. You have to be, you know, sort of do things with looking for several advisors, not only one, that give you the true picture of what the consequences will be, and then act accordingly. You just can't go, you know, like a bull in a china shop with things as serious as a budget for an economy like the UK economy, which is one of the most important in the world. So, as I said, the thing that
that strikes me is that she's offered no apology and she's offered no, you know, explanation of what she did and anything else. And then she's just like wants to come out as a player in the political arena yet again.
Incandescent. Here we go. Here's one on the WhatsApp. Incandescent. With the hubbery of the woman who's added hundreds of pounds to pretty much everyone's outgoing each month by her stupidity and vanity. How dare she have the cheek to even show her face again? The issue that fur coat one is still has a popularity within the Conservative membership, even with all the apparent black marks she has. My guess is that in another Tory contest, she'd come out on top. This is come in. How's the lettuce doing? I'm looking forward to it making a comeback. It has more credibility than Liz Truss, and at least it can evidently turn into something useful like compost, going back to the Church of England thing. And Also, I hate my new mortgage rate, the reduced freedom to work and live abroad, the condition of our NHS, but delighted to see Liz Truss make a comeback. Happy to watch her help the Tories out of power for a generation, a premiership threatened by a person that lost to a lettuce. Mm. Absolutely priceless. So there you have it with Liz Truss. I mean, yeah, this whole thing, 4,000 words in an hour-long interview in The Spectator.
Yeah, I mean, the to be a prime minister in any country at the moment, in the Western world at least, especially in Europe, it's got to be very, very difficult because we have a big problem, and is a problem that if it's not tackled, will continue to do a lot of damage, which is called inflation. And the recipes for containing inflation, it's hard to say because but that's the only solution to that particular illness is high interest rates, where the value to give back value to money. And the other one is reduced consumption, and that leads to a recession, and a recession's the consequence of a recession is job losses, companies closing down, and people not being able to maintain the standards that they're used to. And that's hard to say, but that is the solution to that particular problem of inflation. Now, of course, there are situations like you have with doctors and nurses and so on, where they don't want to lose the financial power, and they want pay rises, but that's putting more more logs to the fire, if you like, because just like a snowball, the means that inflation will continue to grow, and the interest rate is one that is a very difficult one, because you say there was a time, I remember when I bought my first house in the UK, I bought it with interest rates of, I think it was 12 or 13% at the time, when nowhere near those levels, but the house cost £38,000, and now mortgages now, most people have mortgages of 300, 400, half a million pounds worth of mortgage. Of course, and interest rates hike means an awful lot of money. Then in those days, it wasn't so much. So that's why I say it's a very difficult situation to manage, because on one side, you know, you have to put interest rates up. And on the other hand, you know, the consumption has to fall. And we are in the blink of recession, and the recession, a lot of people suffer during a recession time. But that is where the correction of the prices happen when that happens.
Indeed. If you forgot some of the gems that were in Kuateng's blinking you're missing budget, a reversal of the increase in corporation tax, the removal of the caps on bankers' bonus, yet more limits on universal credit, cuts for people who missed punitive jobs targets, less for the poor, more for the rich. That was, so basically it was heated up, reheated, trickle-down economics, which Reagan tried. And that's sort of, as somebody said, it's the fever dream of a million right-wing fantasists. It didn't work then, it won't work now, no matter how much trust might go for it. Truss believes, or wanted the public to believe, that giving more money to the rich made everybody better off. and we watched the fallout of the mini budget in real time. The pound crashed not because of the office of budget responsibilities pot of doom saying, because that's how the market itself reacted when they saw what was happening. And what Truss is trying to do is to rewrite the public memory. And she seems to be saying it would have worked if you'd given me a chance. Well, yeah, but the pound wouldn't have gone through, would absolutely gone through even further through the floor. One of the things that she's looking at is, I mean, the people have been saying that there's, you know, this is again zombie politics that we're seeing at the moment in the UK, with public memory sort of being rewritten by politicians. Normally they give it a month, but in Truss, this has been, you know, literally a few weeks. Just a few weeks, and she's trying to rewrite actually what was going on. So it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one that she's saying, and she's saying that mainly she's even blaming the Conservative Party for triangulating with the Labour Party, whatever that means. I mean,
really?
Parts of the media and the wider public sphere had become unfamiliar with key arguments about tax and economic policy. I knew you guys didn't, and over time sentiment had shifted leftwards. This is partly because we Conservatives had failed to make these arguments enough since 2010, instead triangulating with the Labour Party. So she wants the Conservatives to go even farther to the right.
Look, I'd like to be sometimes a devil's advocate, but with this particular case, there is no way where you could advocate for her performance. And this coming out now with this interview and those statements too early to rewrite what happened, because it's fresh in everyone's memory what happened during the presentation of the mini budget, how the markets reacted, how everyone got affected by the announcement and the policies, and suddenly to come out like that trying to rewrite that real recent bit of history, you can't defend her from any angle, really.
This one, if anything, Liz Truss's interview has all the hallmarks of a manifesto discovered by the FBI on the laptop of some deranged mass shooter after they've gone postal because they were treated badly at school. Dripping in self-pity, with no hint of contrition, the writer believes that the only reason they are a sad, lonely loser is due to some imagined enemy intent on doing them down.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
This in on the WhatsApps. So the new Conservative Party chairman is Greg Hounds. I wonder how many people have actually heard of him. Arguably, there's little evidence of a cost of living crisis when people are still going out, still leasing cars, still buying stuff they don't need, by the evidence I see in London. Not even the Tories understand fiscal policy and basic economics. And my joke of the day, what's shorter than a Liz Truss premiership? A Liz Truss comeback. Tish Boom, here all week. Right then, trains. Andres, trains.
Let me tell you something that is happening in Spain this week. In northern Spain, Renfe, which is the train company, commissioned. So it's been a while on the carts. It's commissioned these trains, basically, for the northern area. It's a very there's a lot of mountains in that area, a lot of tunnels and everything else. So they commissioned the trains that they should be delivered soon, I think, by May, only to learn. Don't laugh, Giles. Only to learn that they were too wide and high for the tunnels of the train lines.
Run that by me. Say that again. Sorry. So they've commissioned...
They commissioned these new trains, wagons, right? Yeah, to go onto this train line,
right,
that has tunnels, but the size of the tunnels are too small for the size of the trains.
Ah.
So just a small mistake there.
Yeah.
When that was discovered, the transport minister said, you know, some sackings and resignations have to take place. This is a too big mistake to be accepted. And only today they have sacked two medium to high managers to prove that they were doing something, you know. And that is on the commissioning of the trains. Funnily enough,
No one has resigned or been sacked from the Ministry of Equality for proposing and approving a law that has taken people out of jail. It's convicted of sex crimes.
Yeah.
Reduction of sentences and so on, which we were talking in the first part of the program. But funnily enough, on that side of things, no one has resigned, no one has been sacked. But the guys who got the measurements of
trains.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
I know.
Because it's so ridiculous.
So the guys who took
the measurements of the tunnels, they didn't get it right, they got the sack.
So you get fired because you get your dimensions wrong on train carriages, but you don't get fired because of a piece of legislation that lets rapists out of jail early.
Correct. That's the message I want to put across in a very complicated way.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. We live, as the Chinese would say, apart from saying, have you got any more balloons out the back?
Yeah.
The Chinese would say, may you live in interesting times. But yeah, and Tris, anything else crossing your radar for this week? Because we've got elections coming up, we've got municipal elections coming up. That's why, in case you're wondering, wherever you are in the TRE region within Spain, why there's so much roadworks going on at the moment and people are doing the pavements, because we've got municipal elections coming up.
Yeah, we've got them, I believe they're in May.
Yeah.
And I would encourage everyone to go out there and vote in elections. Local elections, I mean, to me, they're possibly the most important ones, because they're the ones that are going to affect your everyday life more than general elections. I mean, your town hall will look after your town and your rubbish collection, and will have, all the things that matter to you on a day-to-day basis. It is important to vote. It is important to vote at the people who are going to deliver what the towns need. A lot of roadworks and a lot of announcements of...
Who knows? They may even put a few more roundabouts in before the end of the week.
They'll put roundabouts, they'll put all sorts of things, even some ferias so people can go out dancing and everything, so they're all happy to vote for whoever is in there.
Yes.
I think we're going to see the voting is going to punish a lot the Socialist Party on this election. We'll have to wait and see the general election at the end of the year, but for the town hall, I think an element of vote punishing will
right, almost out of time there. Thank you, Andres. We're out of time today. This show will be replaced with all the calls in. This show will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.